Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Now, recently I had a conversation with one of my buddies. He's kind of a truck nut, a car nut, and he told me that Interstate Batteries makes, from a technical standpoint, some of the best car batteries on the market, period, hands down. Not only that, but they have thousands of retail locations all over the United States. So stop in to a local retail store, ask the guy who works there about their car batteries, and hell, you might as well put one in if they're the best in the business. So interstatebatteries.com is their website. Go there, find out more information about the culture of the company, the batteries that these guys carry, or just stop into a local retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and we have one hell of a show for you guys today. Today we're going to be talking with a gentleman named Brandon McDonald. And why is he on the show? Because I was scrolling through YouTube, found a video about a bow review, a three-part series, and I watched it. And at the end of it, I felt it was the most comprehensive, best put together bow review that I have ever seen. And it wasn't with every bow in the hunting industry, but here's what I'll tell you. It was awesome. I walked away knowing more about archery. I walked away knowing more about those specific bows. And I wanted to get him on the phone today to talk about not only why he decided to do this, but what he feels other people should do when they go out to test bows and find their best fit for, you know, not just, hey, I shoot this brand, you should shoot this brand. It goes deeper than that, right? We need to be focusing on what feels good for us, not what one of our buddies thinks. So Brandon and I kind of shoot the shit for a little bit and talk about the whole process of this bow review. And at the end of the day, I really think that you guys need to go check out that video on his YouTube channel. And we talk about where you can find that as well. So awesome episode, 100% about reviewing bows. I think you guys are going to like it. So we're just going to get right into it. In 3, 2, 1. All right. On the phone with me today, Mr. Brandon McDonald. Brandon, how you doing, man?
I am very well, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I'll tell you what, the reason that you're on the Hunting Gear podcast today is because I was doing my usual X number of minutes a day YouTube consumption, you know, whether it's gear, whether it's hunts, whether it's, you know, I don't know, people slipping on the ice and then me getting a good chuckle, right? And I ran across your video of a very, very well done bow comparison. And that's why I wanted to get you on. I wanted to talk about this bow comparison and pick your brain a little bit about not only those particular bows, but what people may miss or need to think about when they're selecting archery equipment that is right for them. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the podcast, why don't you just share with us where you're from and what do you do for a living?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Brandon McDonald. I live in Nashville, Tennessee now, and I've lived here since 99, originally from Denver, Colorado. And kind of the way I got into the archery world, I decided that I wanted to start filming my hunts. Like, I wanted to have more than just, you know, a trophy head on the wall and some pictures. So I realized that in order to do that, I was going to have to learn about, you know, more about hunting and then also more about kind of camera equipment. And I figured that pushing myself and starting a YouTube channel, doing some gear reviews would help me learn about, you know, cameras and lenses and mics and lighting and all that kind of stuff. So essentially kind of using that as practice for them when I'm actually going out in the field hunting. And I also thought that there was a space in the market for me to, you know, I'm just a guy. I don't have any sponsors. I'm not paid to put any information out there. So I figured that there was a good space for me to come in and say, I'm just a guy and here's my opinion, but then try to make good quality videos that are entertaining to watch, that people are, you know, that aren't too long, that people kind of enjoy. You know, I'm not just a dude standing in my basement with a lamp in my face, you know, trying to put a little bit more production value into it. And the bow review that we're going to talk about was one of my big, like, I knew that was going to be kind of the big video for the year because I was going to put a lot of time into it, put a lot of effort into it, and then obviously put a lot of money into it because I went out and I bought five major manufacturers' flagship bows for the year so that I could really dig in and kind of test each and every one of them, living with them for, you know, 6 months basically is what I ended up with.
That's awesome because I assumed that you would have reached out to those bow manufacturers and got those bows for free. But did you go out and pay full price or did you get any discounts on the equipment?
Literally went to local. I wanted to do it like the everyday man does it.
Gotcha.
Because I am. Now, that may change. Like, next year, I'm assuming that I'll probably be able to reach out to some of the manufacturers, except maybe Bowtech, and probably say, hey, can you send me something? And then obviously I'll send it back when I'm done and we'll see. But I have three kind of local shops, went into those local shops, paid retail, had them set up in the shop, and then, you know, took them home and then made tweaks, you know, on my press and all my vice and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I tried to do it kind of the traditional way, you know, go to the shop, shoot it a few times in the back and then take it home.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do.
So you come off to me as a gear nut kind of guy. Did this start when you started your YouTube channel, or have you always been a tinkerer, always been a gear guy?
So I think I've always been a gear guy. And any hobby that I've ever gotten into, like I'm one of those people that I feel like archery and hunting is something that really took hold of me really strong in my early 30s. Like I kind of bounced around and I did a lot of different things all through my 20s. I graduated college with a music business degree and I played music professionally for 3 years after school, and then got into real estate and I design houses. Oh yeah, sorry, you asked me what I do for a living. I own a real estate investment company with two partners, and we basically buy land, design houses, build the houses, and sell them to people.
Okay.
So that's kind of the you know, what pays the bills. So for me, the creativity of like designing houses, that comes over into making videos, and the direct correlation from me making music back in the day and going into you know, Pro Tools and Logic comes directly over into video editing in Premiere. Like so from a gear standpoint, it's something that I've been kind of into my entire life, where when I get into something, I really want to understand and learn every aspect of it, get as deep as I can. And truthfully, with archery, I didn't realize the rabbit holes that you could go down. You know, like I'm doing arrows right now. I just got done doing stabilizers, and every single thing I dig into, I'm like, holy crap, how deep does this go? Like, I cannot believe, like, yeah, the stabilizer, moments of inertia and physics and engineering. And I'm calling all these people that are, you know, using all these crazy math terms. And I'm just like, this is insane. I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Yeah. And I'm in that stage of education right now, because one thing about the Hunting Gear podcast is when you get the opportunity to talk, you know, most of the time someone talks to a marketing guy or a salesperson, right? But the average Joe never gets the opportunity to talk to the engineer or the guy who did the CAD designs, or, you know, the guy who does the research and development or the testing on whatever piece of equipment it is that we discuss. So that opens up a completely new thought process when it comes to what kind of gear a person should buy. And quite frankly,
yes,
one thing that I've learned is that if that so-called person can't answer a question, it really kind of turns me off about whatever brand or whatever product I'm discussing, and makes me look elsewhere.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I get it. The dynamic between like the engineers that are designing a product, like I've listened to a couple of the podcasts about Sitka, and listening to the guy who kind of came up with the pattern. And then, and in one of the podcasts, I think he was doing with Dudley, he mentioned that Sitka had still kind of changed the pattern because they wanted to, quote, make it more marketable. And I'm really curious what that original pattern and color, like the colors and everything coming out of him, where he said, this is pure science. And then where marketing took it and said, we can't sell pure science. These are the tweaks we need to do.
Right.
And how much that degraded the product.
Yeah.
I'd just be curious.
Yeah. And at the same time, with Sitka's brand and brand recognition right now, if they reintroduced that, how would it take off? Knowing that,
yeah,
how Sitka performs today compared to, you know, this pure science, like you said, camo pattern.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating. And the truth is, I don't, if they were like, it's bright pink and it's got bunny ears and it's absolutely scientifically proven to be the best thing for deer, I'd be a freaking pink bunny in the woods. Let's do it.
Right.
So,
right.
But you may be right, because I'm a Sitka guy. Like that's my primary outdoor gear, you know, is Sitka stuff. So that's why I brought them up. I don't want people to think that I'm dogging on them. I just think that I'm excited for where you're going, especially talking to the engineers, because I think it's going to really kind of lift a veil that a lot of people don't get to kind of see, you know, they don't get to see behind that curtain a lot. So that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have guys like you who are basically just fans of archery equipment or bow hunting, yep, or whatever gear. And then you, yep, dive into it as well to see if everything that they're saying translate into the final product that you ended up buying, right? So,
yep.
So let's just kind of start this off at the very beginning. I want to know, sure, what were you doing when you said to yourself, I want to do the most badass bow review that's ever been on YouTube?
So it didn't start with that statement. Here's what it started with. It started with me going, I want to buy a new bow this year. How do I figure out the best bow for me? Because what I realized was, you show up to the shop and you go stand in a room that's 10 feet long and you're shooting at a target that's like on the floor and you're shooting with a draw length that might be kind of close, or, you know, if you're lucky and they have the mods that can, you know, the adjustable mods, they can get it exactly set up for you, but maybe the poundage is a little bit, you know, higher or lower than you want it to be. I know that a lot of shops will, you know, dial a bow back down to 65 pounds so it feels a lot smoother, it shoots a little bit, you know, it draws a lot easier. Maybe the cam timing's out. Like, there's just all of those little factors that I was like, you know what, I want to live with more of these bows. And so that's where it came up. And so what I did was, there are four shops that are kind of close to me that I said, okay, I'm going to go research the bows that these guys carry, and I'm going to go shoot them. I'm just going to kind of go around. I'm going to shoot them in the shop, and then I'm going to, just my initial impressions, then I'm going to pick. And I think five was kind of an arbitrary number, or maybe it was the amount of dollars that I told my wife we were going to have to spend in order to do this. And she was like, that's the max. So she was really cool through the whole process. And it's because of what I did with the bows that we didn't end up picking, that she was totally great with, you know, with doing the reviews. So the local shops that I went to carried all the manufacturers that were in the review, which were Bowtech, Hoyt, Elite, Prime, and Matthews. And then there was another dealer that carried PSE, but I didn't like my interaction with that dealer with PSE. And I've put a video out about it, and I'm not, you know, like, that video's got more views than almost any of my other ones. Not bad talking PSE, because I ended up going shooting one of the Evos, and it's a badass bow.
So wait a second.
I didn't
what,
want...
What was the... And, you know, if you don't feel comfortable getting into it...
No, yeah, we can go ahead.
What was the reason why PSE wasn't in that? I mean, it was strictly a personal relationship or a meeting?
Yeah, so here's I know that if I have to take my bow in for service, or if I want to go get, you know, like, let's just, again, let's say I'm the everyman and I don't have a press and any of that stuff, I have to go into this to a local distributor to get service on the bow for any warranty work, any just general maintenance. You know, I'll go in, buy arrows, I'll go, you know, all those kind of normal interactions that a normal person's going to have with a bow shop. When I went into the shop, I bought $450 worth of arrows from these guys for the TAC events last year. They know who I am, not because of YouTube. They know who I am because I go in there and I spend money. And so I went in and I said, hey, I would love to shoot one of the Evos. And they said, oh, we don't have one, but we've got one of the, I think it was the Carbon Stealth. And I said, oh, okay. I mean, that was on the list too for me to try. Can I shoot it? And they were like, yeah, it doesn't have a D-loop on it, so it's going to be $30 for us to set it up for you to shoot it. And I was like, this is weird. I've never paid, you know, a setup fee for a bow to go
test
in and
out.
Shoot it before. But I did. I said, all right, let's do it. And I paid him $30, went and shot the bow. It was a 60-pound version, so obviously it feels nothing like a, you know, a 70 or an 80-pound bow.
Right.
So comparing them, you know, standing there, I was just like, okay, this gives me no indication. I asked him if they had plans on getting any of the Evos in. They were like, no, I don't think we're going to. They're not really a hunting a hunting shop. They're a lot more focused on target. And I know why they did this. It's because they have a lot of kids that go in there and shoot. And I guarantee you that there are a lot of parents that come in there and waste a bunch of time and then go buy something off Amazon. And so they thought this is a way that we can kind of stop that from happening.
Right.
But when I have three other choices of places that I can go in, that when I walk in there, they're super cool, they act like they care about my business, why would I then choose this, you know, and it ended up just being the PSE dealer. Like, why would I do that? The amount I liked the Evo was not enough. And honestly, I hadn't shot the Evo when I started out, but I mean, I just wasn't willing to work with that shop. Like, yeah, when I have three other great versions. So that was a big factor for me. And when I was talking to Aaron on the Kifaru cast, he said the same thing. He was like, that is something that people need to consider. Like, if you go into a shop and you're dealing with a bunch of assholes, go to a different shop, even if that means shooting a different manufacturer of bow.
Yeah, you're a better man than me, because the second that they said, well, it's going to be $30 to put a D-loop on it, I would have turned around and just walked straight out the door. I mean,
I figured it'd make a good story, and obviously it did. And I cannot imagine at this point that PSE hasn't reached out to them and said, hey, what are you doing? Because there's this dude on the internet who's talking about you. And if you guys are charging for setups, let's stop doing that.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not, the shop's a good shop, and I get that. Like, I'm not going to try to tell somebody how to run their small business. But again, when I have other options and other stores that I can go to, I'm just going to go to one of those other shops.
Yeah. I feel you, yep, man. I feel you. So, yep.
So basically I wonder, So we made that, obviously, we jumped down that rabbit hole a little bit. So I went to the other shops that carried Bowtech, Prime, Elite, Hoyt, and Matthews.
Yep.
And went and shot all the bows, and then decided which one I want. The one that was kind of surprising, and I think I've got the second most comments on, was the Hoyt Axios. But when I shot that at the shop, it vibrated like a tuning fork in my hands. Like, I'm not joking. I set my cell phone down and timed how long I could actually feel sustained vibration through it, and it was almost 2 seconds.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if they had it set up wrong. I didn't, and I should have taken it in, and I should have said, hey, can you guys go ahead and put this, put this on the draw board and make sure that these cams just aren't crazy, crazy off. I did as I was drawing it back. I didn't notice anything bad, but there's no stabilizers on it. There's no scope. And all of those factors, I've spent a ton of time getting my stabilizer set up exactly how I want it. And that makes such a huge difference. And you can't tell that when you go into a shop. They're not going to let you, go open up a package of stabilizers and go put it on the bow and let you tweak and mess with it for 4 or 5 hours at the shop. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So that was the first step, was I picked the bows based on the shops that I like and shops that I was willing to go back to for work.
Okay. So, brands, and this is just me spitballing off the top here, brands like Martin or Obsession or whatever other, Athens, it was because you didn't pull those brands in because they weren't available at those archery shops where you lived around?
100% correct.
Okay. All right. So it's not like you were snubbing any of these other brands. It's just what was available to you.
Correct. Okay. Now, I could have gone to Bass Pro and I could have bought Bear as well. I could have included them, but I'm happy with the decisions that I made.
Yeah. Okay.
But that doesn't mean anything. I've never shot. I've shot an Obsession, but I've never shot a Martin or an Athens. And again, I've heard good things about all of them, but yeah, the local shops here that I've found and dealt with don't carry them. So that's why I didn't include them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now you have to, if you're going to do this right, you have to lay down guidelines and rules, and every experiment has to have variables and it has to have standards, right? So where if you want to find out what this part of the bow does, you have to have everything else the same and then only focus on this, right? And then switch.
Yep.
You know, like a good scientific experiment, right? So
how did
you go about starting the process, whether you wrote it down or kept it in your head, of how you were going to fairly judge these bows against each other?
So at the very beginning, when I decided to do it, I released a real short, like 2-minute video explaining that I was going to buy these 5 bows and asking what people were interested in, you know, as far as like, what would you guys, if you were doing this, what are the things that you use to determine whether this is going to be your bow or not? And then I literally wrote that list down and then added, you know, pretty much I got enough comments that it covered everything that I wanted to know as well. And then I went into Excel and I wrote categories down for everything, you know, anything that was quantifiable. And then I started. Now, a lot of the things like draw, you know, there is, I could have measured pound for pound at every inch as I'm drawing the bow back, you know, and written that down so that I got like a perfect indication of the actual draw curve. But I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I'm more creative than I am an engineer, and so that level of detail wasn't gonna go that deep.
Okay.
So what I did was I literally set all 5 of the bows up, I would draw them, and then I literally drew it out with how they felt to me. But then certain, how does the back wall feel? That's another one that's not necessarily like a quantifiable. I think we could all probably agree. If you've shot a bunch of bows and we went and picked up these 5 bows, you would say the prime back wall is much, much firmer than the Hoyt back wall. And I think we would all agree, but to what degree, maybe in question.
Yeah.
So I literally would just, you know, like when it came to the back wall, I had all 5 of them next to each other and I was going as quickly as I could between them so that my brain was retaining the information of, okay, the Hoyt, that back wall is pretty squishy on that thing compared to, you know, the Bowtech, which had a surprisingly strong back wall for the way it's constructed.
Okay.
You know, so, but then there was other ones that were much more scientific, like on actual, when I went in, I shot it, I compared all of them at 50, 60, 70, 80, and 100 yards, and I measured the 3 arrow groups, you know, down to the half inch, and then added up all those scores, and then, you know, came up kind of like you would with golf, came up with, you know, whoever had the lowest score was the best, you know, at that part of it. So that was obviously much more science.
Right.
Except you're still including me. I didn't use a Hooter shooter, and there's days when I'm a better shot and days when I'm a worse shot. But, you know, I tried to disclude those days. If I was doing really bad one day, I wasn't, you know, I was just like, all right, well, we'll just shoot and then maybe tomorrow I'll feel better and we'll go for score then.
Got you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So as you start to get into the process of breaking these bows down and looking into the details and the specs, just to clarify, were you using the same rest, the same sight, and the same arrow setup on all of them?
So I was willing to tweak the arrow setup slightly if I needed it, like if I felt like a bow was going to do better with more point weight or less point weight. So that was one of the experiments that I think took the most time on the front end, was making sure that the bows were set up the way I wanted them and the arrows were impacting the way I wanted them. Because obviously a bow that has a more aggressive cam is going to, you know, like the arrows are just, they're going to fly different. I feel like at the end, I ended up finding one arrow that was working well for all of them. So it was I was using a Victory Vap 300 spine. I think I had a 50 grain outsert in the front and then 125 grains of point weight. And then a 4-fletched AAE Max Stealth Vanes. That was something that I think worked good for all the bows. And I measured all of them. Their draw weights were within, I think they were within a pound. I'd have to go look back, but I think they were all within a pound where I settled. So I was trying to equalize. And yes, I used the same scope when we were actually scoring. I was using the same scope. I bought a bunch of QAD rests that I was putting on all of them. I did use a trophy taker, SmackDown, for some of the shooting, but when we were actually scoring, it was all with the QAD rests.
Okay. All right. So there is your, you know, there's the scientific part of it, right? You got your standards, which are the rest, the arrow, and the sight for the most part.
Yep.
And then the bow itself is the variable. Okay. So where, right off the bat, you cut two of those bows, right? Or was it two or three of them right off the bat?
It was two. Yeah. Two. So I cut the Bowtech Revolt X and the Hoyt RX4. You know, in that first video that I released, I cut those in the first minute of the video. For the video being interesting, I thought that would be a good little take. But the Bowtech and I just didn't gel with it. It was something about the grip. I actually really like the way the grip feels, but the bow just would kick out to the left. And I shot the Bowtech probably five times more than I shot any of the other bows during the review process, because I could not stand that I could not get the bow feeling the way I wanted to. I tried 15 different stabilizer setups. I went crazy too. Like I was taking stuff way off kilter with stabilizers. I was doing everything that I could, and I just never got the bow to feel the way I wanted it to feel. So the Bowtech was, the Bowtech was out pretty quick for me. And then the Hoyt, the RX4, and maybe it wasn't quite fair. Maybe it should have been the Axios, in the mix, because obviously you're putting an $1,800 carbon riser bow in with a bunch of aluminum bows. But I threw the Hoyt out rather quickly too, because I just didn't feel like for the money compared to the other bows that it was worth it.
Yeah.
Like I mean, to me, it's a good bow. I would definitely shoot it, but it wasn't any better. And honestly, I like the Matthews and the Prime more than the Hoyt. So to me, the increased dollars weren't worth it. And I had to add a bunch more stabilizer weight down low to get it to sit the way I wanted it to sit, because it's, you know, I think it's 6 ounces lighter, maybe a pound lighter. I think 3.6 pounds. I don't have my numbers in front of me, but I basically, the ounces that I added in stabilizer weight kind of negated it a little bit. And then, you know, just the grip I didn't prefer on it. So that was another one that for me was relatively easy to get rid of. And I didn't really like the softer back wall. I'm not really a huge fan of. I kind of like something a little more middle of the road.
Yeah. I'll tell you, every ATA show, I try to shoot as many bows as possible. I go to the flagships. I go to the big brands. This past year, I decided I wanted to kind of stay away from, I tried to stay away from the popular bigger brands and shoot some of the, what I would call second tier companies. But I ended up shooting a lot of them. And I'll tell you what, in the past, I had a couple Bowtechs and I absolutely loved them. But then something happened. I don't know when, I don't know where and why, but those bows just didn't feel right to me anymore. I've never been a huge fan of Hoyts because I felt like the Hoyts had a ton of hand shock in them. A lot, you know, like you said, the vibration.
Sure.
wasn't a fan of their draw cycles. So I personally, when you cut those two right out of the gate, I was like, you know what, I agree with this guy. I know where this guy's coming from.
Yeah. And I think with the Bowtech, I was getting feedback from people that liked the Bowtech that were shorter draws, 28 inch and under guys seemed to like the Bowtech.
Yeah.
And like when I switched it over, and I took it down to 28 inch and took it to 29, and it was certainly that the last 3 inches of the draw on the Bowtech were really where it just felt like a disaster. And if you switched it over into performance mode, and I think I was doing 30.5 draw, 30.5 was where I was testing everything out at. Performance mode at 30.5, it just felt awful.
Yeah,
like just that last 3 inches of the draw was like this grinding, you know, huge drop off, and it was bad.
Yeah.
So So, but it's like I said, the guys that are shorter draw length seem to, you know, seem to like them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you take those two out. What's left?
So the Elite, and then the Matthews, and the Prime. So the Prime was the Black 3, the VXR 31.5, and then the Elite Cure.
Yep, I shot all those as well at the ATA show as well. I will put, and I'll just kind of express my opinion. I was really surprised with Elite's bow this year. I felt they put out a really good bow. It felt really good, dead in the hand. Prime's bow, I liked last year's Logic. What did I have? The CT3. And then the year before that, I had the Logic with the shorter axle to axle. And this year, I didn't. Yeah. I still like Prime a lot, but I didn't like this year's model as much as I did the previous two models, flagship bows.
Got it.
And then I'll tell you this. I'll be honest. I have never, ever been a fan of Matthews bows. Never. And I don't like their draw cycle. I never liked their draw cycle. Everything else was, you know, it's like if your bow doesn't feel right in the draw cycle, it's almost like what's the point of going forward with it, right? And that's the way I looked at it. And I've never been a fan of their draw cycle. And this year,
that's so interesting because they're so, it's such a flat, like to me, it's such a vanilla draw cycle. Like
yeah.
It's so flat, and that drop into the back wall is so short. Like that's so funny to me that I don't know. It's like somebody's like they're like having a strong opinion on not liking clear.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know why. Just
and you know, and I'm sure you got feedback from every single bow. About every single bow is like, well, how can you do this because of this? And I like this. And what we have to talk about is personal preference, right? I mean, this was very comprehensive and awesome, but at the end of the day, right, it's your opinions. And there's the guy who is in love with Hoyt and in love with Bowtech is be like, well, what's he talking about? This bow's awesome. You know what I mean? So this year I really liked the bow that Matthews put out, but I am a fan of the hard back walls. For me, just the dump right into it. That lets me know I'm done. I'm going to hold it right there, right? I'm not a spongy back wall guy. I like to know that I'm at the end of it, and that way I don't need to stop pulling. You know, I can stop pulling and just chill, but that, you know, that's my personal preference. But I will say that at the ATA show this year, those were my top three as well, Prime, Elite, and Matthews, with an asterisk next to Gearhead. Have you ever shot a Gearhead?
No.
Dude.
I don't even know if I've ever heard Gearhead.
Dude, it's that double riser bow where...
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, I have seen what you're talking about.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, they got something going on with that bow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna have to give that a look then if you're recommending it that highly.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna try to go to ATA this year because I need to try to start getting everything kind of in line. I definitely want to go so that I can kind of shoot stuff, you know, on the front end too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So those were the three. Did going into the final three, did you already have an idea? I mean, was it a night and day difference? Like, dude, I already know I'm going to like this bow better than the other ones, or was it really close?
So I knew right from the start, as soon as I started shooting everything, that it was going to be a hard choice between the Prime and the Matthews.
Yeah.
Like the grip on the Prime for me and the way I hold the bow, it was like they freaking custom made that grip perfect for the way I hold my bow. And so I'm still sad every time I pick up the Matthews, because the Matthews, honestly, the grip I think was my fourth favorite out of any of the bows. So I miss that grip on the Prime every day.
Yeah.
So I knew that it was going to be between the VXR and the Prime. The Elite is the value for the Elite, because I think it was a $999, and it comes with like the Winner's Choice strings. And I know that Winner's Choice, there's been some like, I think there's been some quality questionable quality stuff that's come up in the past. but I had Winner's Choice on the Elite, and I swapped the Zebras out on the Matthews for Winner's Choice, and I haven't had issues with either of them.
Okay.
So I'll say as of right now, either the quality issues have been addressed, or I'm happy with my setup. And yeah, the adjustability on the Elite, with how you can tune it from the actual limb pockets where you're kind of creating cam lean from the limb pockets. I thought that was a pretty cool innovation. So I think that like if somebody only had an Elite dealer nearby, you should definitely buy an Elite. It's a cool bow, and I think that the value that you get out of that bow is great.
Yeah, and the reason they have I'm sure you know this, but the reason that they have Winner's Choice, and I'm pretty sure, I'm almost 90% sure, the reason they have Winner's Choice on Elite bows is because the Outdoor Group owns both Elite and Winner's Choice strings. So
yeah,
it's a marriage.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the, yeah. So basically I knew that it was going to come down to, I liked the Elite, but the grip I didn't like as much. And because the Cure is a 30-inch draw, when I had it set to the 80% let-off, it was just a hair shorter than I wanted it to be. And obviously I could have just extended the loop, but that was just a hair shorter than I wanted. So I think that kind of that combination of factors for the Elite kind of put it out. But I liked the way it shot.
Okay.
What it really came down to for me was the hold and then the actual accuracy. There's something magic about the VXR, because I had the Traverse from last year, and I like the draw cycle. I like the, you know, it's pretty neutral. And then I when you're dumping off into the back wall, it's not this, you know, big dramatic thing. The back wall has a little bit of give to it. So it's like I said, I kind of like that middle of the road. So when I start pulling, I feel like I'm pulling into something. Whereas the Prime, I literally, as soon as you'd start pulling, it just felt like my elbow was touching a concrete wall behind me.
Yeah.
So I don't, if you like a stiff draw, like, or if you like a stiff back wall, then the Prime is definitely the way you should go.
Yeah.
And I like the adjustability of the Prime too. Like, that's one of the things that I think Matthews is behind the ball on. You know, everybody this year, it seemed like, is going with mods that you can kind of tweak and change. Or, you know, the adjustability of bows is getting, more and more versatile for the end buyer to be able to mess with and not necessarily have to take it to the shop. And Matthews, I think, there's one of two schools of thought. Either they're thinking, no, we're building tanks that we don't want to come apart and we don't want civilians working on them. Or two, we probably need to get some adjustable mods on here so people can start messing with their, you know, messing with their draw links a little bit easier.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So you don't need to go into a huge detail, because when it's all said and done, I want to point people to your video, because I think everybody will get a lot of education and benefit from watching the video. But real quick, what came down to you at the end picking the winner?
It was 100% the hold of the bow, which then lent itself to accuracy. So the VXR I was more accurate with than the other bows. And on days where I feel like I'm kind of in that flow state, like when I'm in the zone, I feel like with a normal, you know, hunting stabilizer setup, a 12-inch front bar and a 8 or a 10-inch back bar, I can stand at 80 yards and draw, and that pin just stays on target. It just holds in there, and I'm shooting softballs at 80 yards. And, you know, that was what it was for me. I thought I was going to get there with the Prime, and maybe if I would have spent more time on stabilizer stuff with that, I spent plenty of time with it. It just, maybe if I would have spent more, I could have got it there, but I just didn't feel like the hold for me was quite as good with the Prime, and I think that my accuracy just slightly suffered with that.
So when you say hold, you mean at full draw?
At full draw.
Okay.
When I'm actually holding the bow, the VXR for some reason just feels rock steady. For a little short 31.5-inch axle bow, it's like I said, I just feel like there's some sort of magic in there. Yeah. That it just it just holds like a demon.
Okay, you know? Cool. So you ultimately picked the Matthews. Now, how many days did this take?
Well, it's 6 months.
It took 6 months to complete the video and do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for me to go through everything, and that's not me. You know, like that's not like my singular focus every single day. But I mean, I think every single day I was thinking about certain things and tweaking certain things, and I'd come down here and neglect work and you know, be messing with the different bugs. But I mean, it took me 6 months to do it the way I ended up wanting to do it. Do I think that you need to go through this process to buy a bow? No, I don't. I don't think you did. I don't think you do. And I don't know that I'll ever do it again just because of the amount of like just mental bandwidth that it took for me to focus on this for this long. But it was, I learned a ton about myself and the way I shoot and a ton about all the bows this year. So I'm super, super happy that I did it. But yeah, it was long way to answer. It took about 6 months for me to do it.
Okay. So with all that said, right, you took a deep dive into archery and compound bows and reviewing that equipment. What advice would you give to the average Joe who is, whether they're brand new to archery or whether they're seasoned, what advice would you give to someone looking for their next bow on how to properly compare, how to you know, look into the details a little bit more, how to pick their next bow?
So if you're new and you're buying your first bow, any of the bows in this category are that I picked, you're going to be great. Like you're never going to start shooting and then immediately be like, oh, I would have liked the Matthews more than the Prime. Like you're just not going to know. They're that close together. So go to your local shop and pick based on the style you like, the color you like, the, you know, that like that legitimately they're the bows are so good and so close together. If you've never shot before, maybe it's about budget. Go buy the Elite because it was the cheapest one and shoot the crap out of that thing and be ready to, you know, in the next year, two, three, four, five, then you're going to have that kind of, those kind of grooves set in your mind where you think a bow should feel this way. And then when you go in and you try another one, you go, oh, that feels different. And I know that because now I've spent all this time shooting this one bow. So if you're new, I would say base it on like shop proximity. And then where it becomes more nuanced is if you've been shooting for a while and you're looking for your second bow, bring your release, like bring the release that you've been using. Don't use the shop release. Bring your arrows, because I don't know how many times I've gone in you're having to try a bow that's 70 pounds with a 400 spine arrow that I'm worried is going to break, or it's loud as crap. So bring your own release, bring your arrows. If you've got stabilizers and you've got kind of a general way that you like setting them up, bring them in and see if the shop will let you put them on there. When you're going to go, call them and make sure that they've got a bow that can be set up at the poundage and the draw length that you want. And that is super important. If you're a 30-inch draw and you go in and you're shooting a 28-inch draw, that bow is going to feel completely different, and you're going to have zero actual idea if you like it or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it literally is it's a completely different thing. So make sure that they've got the time to get you set up. And then I would say take as much time as you can. This is what I would do. Like I was thinking about when I went down to Archery Den in Franklin, their targets are kind of low and on the ground. And so there was one of the times I went in, got down on my knees because I wanted to be able to draw straight and then shoot. And I literally closed my eyes, threw the bow, closed my eyes, make sure that I wasn't going to miss the target. And then thought, how does this feel in my front hand?
Yeah.
And then I'd shoot. And then I would think, how does this feel? How does the hold feel? And the next time I'm putting my mind in different places on my body with my eyes closed. And then, you know, the last one was, how does this feel in the release? Like, how does this feel when I set this release off? How does that feel?
Yeah.
And I took my time. So go in knowing that, you know, it may take you an hour and maybe you go shoot 30, 40, 50 arrows, and just making sure that you have the time and that the shop has the time and can accommodate you to do it. That would be probably my recommendation.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's something that I do whenever I go, and a lot of it is at the ATA show where I'm shooting all these different bows, but close my eyes when I shoot. And that way,
yep,
you're shutting off one sensory, right? And you're there just for the feel of it. And I recommend that as well. Now be careful, you know, when you do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you obviously got to make sure that you know the arrow is going in the right direction. So yeah, it's aim and then close your eyes. And then, yeah, you know, they've got the big, like, 6-foot by 6-foot block targets down there at the end, you know, and they're 10 yards away.
Yeah.
So I think they're shorter than that. I think they're the 4-foot by 4-foot. That's why I was ended up getting on my knees for that one.
All right.
So yeah, I think just being willing to be like, I'm going to do something that is a little embarrassing maybe in public, where I'm going to stand in the shop and I'm going to shoot the bow for an hour, but like, you're going to buy that bow and live with it for a while. And don't be afraid if they carry multiple manufacturers to, like, put the Axios down and pick up the RX4 and then pick up the VXR and then pick up the Black 3 and, like, go back and forth between the bows. And again, think about, you know, how does the hold feel? How does the draw feel? How does the back wall feel? And if they're all set up the same, you should have a really good indication of, you know, what the future is going to be like with that bow. And then obviously once you get a scope on and stabilizers in your quiver, it's going to, you know, quiet down. The vibration is going to be a little bit less, but I think it gives you a real good, yeah, I think that gives you a good baseline into, you know, into how to work into a new bow.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned you learned something about yourself as an archer. What did this process teach you?
It's going to be tough for me to quantify it just for this process. But I can talk about the process in general of this year and me digging into archery more. There's something deeply gratifying about seeing your scores get better, knowing that the time and effort that you're putting into something in a very obvious way of, at the beginning of the year, I'm shooting 285s on a Vegas 3 spot, and now I'm shooting 295 plus. You know, like, so that journey is very gratifying. The daily meditation of going out, because it truly is, there's something almost spiritual about this, about archery. When you go out and turn everything else off and start to just draw that bow, and you get into that flow state, and then the release cracks off, and as soon as it goes, you know that arrow is going exactly where you want it. The gratification is something that just, like, explodes in the center of my body outward. And I know I sound like a freaking giant hippie right now, but man, there's just something that is so satisfying about doing it correctly.
Yeah.
And then when you don't do it correctly, there's something that you're laying in bed at night thinking, I need to get back out there. I want to get back out there with my bow because I didn't shoot well today and I want to go shoot well.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, the journey of archery in general this year and the amount of time I've spent on it has been, you know, and especially with the lockdowns and all that stuff, it's given me something to really center around and ground myself into. So
yeah,
it's been deeply satisfying.
I'll tell you what, man, one of my favorite things is you have a quiver full of arrows, you're back there at like 40 or 50 yards, and you just pocket every one of them, right? And they're in like a half dollar group, and there's like that feeling right there when that last arrow out of the quiver lands right where it's supposed to land. I just feel like, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like I'm the best archer. It's like, move over, Morgan, because your days are numbered, right?
Exactly.
So
yeah, it for me, it's 95% great feeling and 5% me worried that I just broke an arrow, busted a knot. Because you do those, you know, you hear the carbon and the fletching slapping together, and you're like, crap.
Yeah.
That means more work. No, you're exactly right. And I think that the cool thing about archery is I can feel that way. If I'm shooting at 20 yards, I can feel good about that. If I have a great night where I'm blind bailing and I'm in my house and I'm 3 yards away, but I'm really working on one specific thing, like engaging my rhomboid in my back arm. If I'm doing one specific task while I'm practicing and I feel like at the end of that practice I've done a good job kind of focusing on that. There's just something, the discipline that translates to the rest of life it's obvious. Like it's quantifiable. Yeah. My fitness has gotten better this year. I can't say my business has gotten better this year just because I think everything that's been going on is, and maybe that's probably just an excuse, but I think that it is something that translates to the rest of life.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Well, we mentioned this video. I want everybody who's listening to this to go check it out. Where can they watch it at?
So if you go to youtube.com and then you just search Brandon McDonald, I am the guy who is not the giant black NFL player.
Okay.
I'm the archer. And if you search through my channel, you'll see I did two reviews on the bow. There was kind of a part one and then a part two. And then the part three was me giving away the other four bows. So one of the reasons my wife was on board was when I told her, I said, I want to take the four bows that we didn't choose and I want to give them to the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation so that they could, you know, use that to kind of further that, further that organization, that she was totally on board.
Perfect.
So there's three videos. And again, Brandon McDonald on YouTube is the easiest way to find them.
Well, sir, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on and sharing your story with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Dan. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.